is Barrett Brown. Thanks for listening to our Who, What, Why podcast. Our guest today is Alex Winter. Like myself, Alex Winter is something of a hybrid entertainer and serious analyst of our times. Best known previously for his acting roles in early 90s films like Lost Boys and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Since then, has careened into a new career as a documentary filmmaker, also a figure and kind of a node in the transparency and information movements. He knows pretty much everyone worth knowing in that scene. Every time Alex Winter and I interact or have interacted in our short time knowing each other, something terrible has happened to me. Usually we first came in contact when I was still in prison, and he tried to get in to interview me. Never quite made that happen. The Bureau of Prisons ignored his request to do so. One time we were on the phone doing a recorded interview, and the cops came and grabbed me and threw me in the shoe. Thereafter, when I was released in late November of 2016, he picked me up along with my parents to film for a short documentary he was doing for Laura Poitras's film company under the Intercept First Look umbrella. And on that occasion, we didn't have a long time to talk because we were in a race to get to Dallas from South Texas in the brief amount of time I had been given by the authorities to reach the halfway house. If I hadn't made that journey in the sufficient time, I would have been rearrested. So Alex and I have not had a chance much to discuss the larger, less ephemeral issues that are confronting us all right now. My first question for you is, in the last 5 or 6 years, among the people that you, not in the activist community that you associate with, but more around Hollywood, the sort of mainstream sort of cultural media opinion makers, do you think that there's been a significant reduction in the extent to which people give the U.S. government a benefit of the doubt? As in, is there more willingness now to look into other avenues rather than, you know, the institutions that we've inherited?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, you know, the timeline you're asking about, you know, five or six years, I guess is interesting. You know, I've seen, you know, in my lifetime, just given, you know, the period that I've been aware of the news, which started in the 70s, and my sort of earliest memories of being aware of what was going on was Nixon and Watergate and going to Spiro Agnew demonstrations and things like that when I was quite young. But I feel like for many of us who grew up in this generation, it was a time post-Vietnam, post-Watergate, that's definitely created or fostered more skepticism about our government. I think that's true globally, though. I don't think it's just the United States. I think in general, there became a lot more, I would say, mass skepticism. You know, as you asked sort of outside the realm of activism, obviously a lot of this began far earlier than that, but really bubbled up into the mainstream in America, in my experience, post-Vietnam, post-Watergate. And so I think you have a more skeptical populace in general. And I'm not, I know you're not either, but I'm not talking about kind of the libertarian stance. I'm not talking about the sort of just let the free markets rule. I'm talking more about a feeling that certain institutions were either corrupt or were not to be looked upon as being, you know, as quite as pure-hearted as, you know, we were led to believe. But again, this all started, you know, quite a while ago, and certainly, you know, post the civil rights movement and you know, the FBI under Hoover, that really gave, you know, and the rise of the CIA, anyone who was paying attention to the news was beginning to have these feelings. But I would say, sure, that they've grown exponentially as the information age has hit. In the digital age, where information is so much easier to get, and, you know, I'm sure we can talk about fake news. It's getting kind of tiresome. But, you know, the reality of it
you
is...
You mentioned the So you mentioned the Nixon administration and the cynicism that existed back then. I've read a couple of fine books recently about that era and about sort of going through the culture of the era, how much more cynical and sort of almost nihilistic it was compared to anything that I've seen in my lifetime. And obviously there was that period of with the Nixon with Watergate, there was a period afterwards, you know, of triumph in so much as that, you know, that there's some cynicism, but look, we've overcome this horrible cancer on our side. The system worked in the end. And that belief, I think, may have been deleterious itself because it allowed a lot of institutional rot to sort of to proceed, you know, away from prying eyes, everyone having sort of determined, you know, we've defeated this horrible menace.
That's true, institutional and societal, right? Because I think that complacency was societal as well. I mean, it's just to throw it back on the short we made. You had when I interviewed you in prison, I was interviewing you either once a week or somewhere around that for quite a while, for the better part of a year before you got out. And that was one of the interviews I remember striking me. So I stuck that quote at the very beginning of the short, which was, I was curious to know what it felt like inside. With the sort of rise of Trump. And, you know, what you said at that time is pretty much what I feel as well, which I think was a good quote of just, you know, the when you have somebody who's this extreme, and in this case, he's an extreme buffoon, it shines a light on things that were there to begin with that people weren't paying so much attention to, and they were right. More complacent, thinking that the government that they currently had was fine. So there are a lot of things that are coming to light now that have been going on for, you know, more than 5 or 6 years, for decades, that need to be exposed or at least made aware. People need to be aware that they're going on. But they're only being paid attention to because we have this titanic moron in office who just shines that light on every aspect of government malfeasance and incompetence.
Now, given that the non-nuanced take on the present day is basically, you know, from the standpoint of the average, reasonable, moderately informed person, including commentators, you know, on CNN, what have you, is essentially that we have a system that was pretty good, and then suddenly now we have this horrible aberration, and that once that aberration, if we dislodge this aberration, as with Watergate, then everything will be fine again. When you have this sort of Democrats, you know, praising Comey during these hearings that I was able to see, you know, 2 years ago, you know, saying the FBI is a wonderful institution. It's you know, defending the FBI, understandably, against the more inane and disingenuous attacks by the Republicans who have attacked it almost exclusively for the wrong things. Is there a danger that in this process of dislodging this latest menace, that these institutions that needed reform now escape scrutiny? Simply because we've had to stand behind them, firm them up in the face of attacks in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. I mean, people are being pummeled by the daily or minute by minute Trump news cycle, which is largely just hot air and not worthy of news. You know, I would say that there are two things going on from the standpoint that, yes, there is the danger, as you pose it, that those institutions that are badly in need of reform are just going to be more corrupt and more strengthened and emboldened. But there's also the reality that Trump is not anything, he's not even a symptom of a cause. He's such an anomalous presence. He's not the problem. He is a problem, but he is not the right. problem. The problem will still be here when he's gone. And the problem is being maximized by everyone around him on both sides of the political aisle in significant ways every day. But largely what we get is a news cycle that's focused on Trump's daily infantile antics and, you know, too much news on Russian social media bots. And not that there aren't bad things going on from over there. But I would say in general that we're suffering from a massive lack of nuance across the board. And everything is in this very cockeyed black and white place where, you know, the Russia story is either nonsense, or we're suffering a takeover that nobody's, you know, willing to admit that we have already been overrun by the Russian, the Red Menace. Obviously, the truth is completely in between those things, with an enormous amount of nuance on both sides that's just being ignored. And the same with government. And yes, we are elevating, you know, suddenly George Bush is a hero.
Right.
To the left and the right, and we're all jumping up and down with rose-colored glasses of that era, which was a absolute train wreck for those of us who lived through it as adults. And you know, then you have people in social media that have been elevated by people that normally would have you know, been quite aghast, like David Frum and some other people, whether you like them or not, that just would not have been trafficking in the circles that they're currently trafficking in, because there's just this panic, and I would, you know, a flat out desperation to cling to something that feels like the normalcy that we had before Trump, when the normalcy that we had before Trump was a mess and badly in need of reform and repair. Raising and lowering the FBI every other week is an important point in terms of just what the seesaw that we're living on, and the lack of any kind of anchor is very much emblematic of the moment that we're in.
What has surprised you most of all about everything in the last several years? Not just in terms of events, but in terms of reactions to events, in terms of how events have been taken and how they've settled in and how events have changed things.
Yeah, that's how I would respond to that, is I think that what is the most disturbing, you know, when you look at history, you know, even recent 20th century history, and you look at the rise of fascist states or other movements that have captured a populace. You know, I think that the dualistic aspect of having more facts and information at our fingertips than we've ever had in human history, and the utter pervasive ignorance, often willful, that duality is just very disturbing. You know, the notion of fake news, the complete denial of climate change in the face of the facts, the rise of the flat earthers, you know, which can be laughed off, but is pretty disturbing. If you speak to a flat earther that isn't a complete idiot, and there are many of them, and I've spoken to many of them, it's disturbing, because what I think that what is happening as a result of, you know, a number of factors, obviously, I don't think it can be blamed on any one thing. I think that Trump is kind of a galvanizing factor, but I maintain that there was a lot of, you know, a lot of the issues that are really pervasive have nothing to do with Trump and will outlast him quite happily. You know, the times that we're in are beginning to impact people in a way that is potentially very, very dangerous. And, you know, if you talk to a flat earther who is, you know, educated for any length of time, you really will get to sort of what we were talking about a moment ago, which is a deeply rooted disillusionment with institutions, you know, government, corporate, et cetera, family, even just feeling that society is corrupt and not to be trusted. And so it's almost a form of mental protest. It's, you know, why would I trust that what NASA is telling me is a photograph from space is a photograph from space, because, you know, the government lies about everything and corporations lie about everything. And so I'm going to stand firm in the position that it's all meaningless. So it isn't really fake news at the end of the day, because most of these people, the people that we care about, the people that weren't just buying the National Enquirer and accepting it as fact, you know, 30 years ago, that's the disturbing movement, because those are the people that are willfully detaching themselves from fact, and willfully detaching themselves from, you know, from being members of society that can actually impact society for good and help drive us into a place of reform that would be beneficial. So that, to me, that's the scary. It's not even cynicism. It's really it's a form of you know, societal and political nihilism that is sort of, I think they would look at as idealism. I don't think they would think of themselves as nihilists. I think they would think of that as an ideal. That is a shocking new state of affairs for it to be so pervasive. It's really been, only, I would say, in the last, since the internet became very pervasive and obviously some of the issues that are going on with the world and the way we interrelate and neoliberalism and neoconservatism and a bunch of things that have not been so great for the planet, I think has driven people into this space.
Do you think the internet has altogether at this point, I'm not asking whether you what it has the potential to do or what might happen in the future, but at this point, do you think the internet is proving to be, on the whole, more of a tool for the reasonable, well-intended, decent people who respect the rights of others, or do you think it has had a more deleterious effect and that had it not existed, we would be in a better position to confront these institutions right now? Do you think it's just the cons about the pros?
I have this conversation almost daily. I really do, just given the work that I've done, and I'm making a documentary about blockchain technology and the future of another attempt at a massive decentralization movement, which is what the internet was when it started, and it was quickly co-opted and turned into a highly, if not the most centralized system that exists in the world. So, I mean, this is really a fundamental question of the moment that we're in. I'm a little Pollyanna-ish about this. I've always believed, and I grew up, I'm old enough to have grown up in a completely analog world. And so I've really watched these technologies evolve from the get-go. And I absolutely believe that the pros outweigh the cons, at least as of right now. I mean, up until Boston Dynamics created that robot that can open doors, but we're all going to die. But other than that, I do actually believe the pros outweigh the cons. I think that what we're seeing, and you know, and this does begin to reflect on the Trump of it all, is mostly at the moment is highly reactionary. It is not fundamental in the sense that there's a reactionary movement that is anti-fact because now the facts are at our disposal. There is a reactionary movement against the fact that certain aspects of our world are getting cleaner, safer, more diverse, that we are becoming largely as a society more progressive in our views, gay marriage, et cetera. There, you know, a lot of change, which has been on the rise for well over 100 years, is really beginning to take root. And so I think that sometimes the technology or the internet can be a scapegoat, just as Trump can be, for times that are changing because a lot of those changes are rising to the surface for the first time right now that have been bubbling towards the surface for quite some time. But I think that in general, for the future, if you know the current generation doesn't destroy the planet, I think that actually the internet and the amount of information that's at our disposal and the ability for those who actually want to seek facts to find them is very hard to look at that as not beneficial. And the ability to bring certain things, tools to the world, including energy, information, other ways to benefit developing nations that are coming from the internet, ways of helping refugees, I think those are irrefutable positives. So I think that we're in a really bad moment. I think we're in an extremely reactionary moment. And yes, historically speaking, those have had the ability to be devastating on the planet. I'm not that Pollyannish that I don't think that there's going to be huge wreckage and a lot of bloodshed and a lot of pain that's going to take us and damage is going to take time to remedy. But I don't think it's permanent. I think it's largely a reactionary wave.
Let me conclude by asking you an actual specific question this time. This is something I know that you know the background to, so I'm curious as to your thoughts. The Intercept today just came out with a report on this Democratic congressional candidate from New York, Patrick Ryan, who it turns out used to work for Barrico. In fact, he worked for Barrico very actively on the things for which Barrico, the few things for which Barrico is known. Barrico, of course, was one of several firms that made up Team Themis, along HB Gary Federal and Palantir. he specifically himself, it looks like, worked on some of their programs to track Black Lives Matter and otherwise to surveil left-wing activist groups. And now he's a Democratic congressional candidate. Just knowing those things, just at this early point, and knowing what you know about how these kind of related issues have worked out in the past several years, do you think it's more likely that the Democratic Party will at some point say, oh, wait, this guy kind of has a sketchy background. This is not the kind of future the Democratic Party really needs to endorse, and that he is replaced? Or do you think it's likely that this will be kind of be ignored and that this person will somehow manage to bring support from progressives and from the same kind of left-wing activists that he was in the habit of spying upon?
I think that this is a moment that requires everybody to be hyper vigilant. And I think it's that both sides of the political aisle, in fact, it's not even, you know, the political landscape in general, forget the partisan nature, is adept at subterfuge. And they both, you know, they all have an agenda of creating subterfuge for whatever reason. Trump's is obvious. You know, but also whatever you, and I'm a Democrat, whatever you want to say about, or I'm registered as a Democrat, whatever you want to say about Hillary Clinton, the loss was devastating. And there's an enormous amount of ass covering going on that is preventing the Democratic Party from becoming reformed to the degree that it should be, and accepting the loss for what it is and not something that was hatched in a Russian social media den, which it's just ludicrous. And embarrassing, frankly, on a certain level, the level to which her loss has been blamed on Russian intervention, knowing that there was Russian intervention. So again, I'm, you know, at the risk of being, you know, labeled in one bucket or the other, it's a nuanced issue. And because it's nuanced, it requires vigilance, which means we have to look really closely at the behaviors of various actors. And, you know, in this particular instance, this is a really good litmus test for what the Democratic Party is doing. And if it gets brushed under the rug and then just covered over with people bloviating about Russian bots, then that's a cause for concern.
Right. Well, we've seen the Democratic Party in modern history reform itself, sometimes very quickly and sometimes very dramatically, as it did in the mid-70s, for instance. It became a very different party, a much better party. And we've seen that happen, you know, from time to time since then. So it's obviously not outside the realm of the possibility. And I suppose that this particular case of this particular congressman will absolutely, as you say, serve as a litmus test, kind of something to watch and see. Is the Democratic Party prepared to take on the moral role that it needs to take on at this point in history? And I guess we'll have to see.
We're not in it. It seems difficult to imagine that we're in a time where reform is going to come quickly or easily. I think that the boat itself has been so rocked, and all sides of the political spectrum are in such a state of chaos and disarray. And then there are very bad actors, again, on all sides of the political spectrum that are taking advantage of this moment of disarray. It's like a three-card Monte game, and you know, there's a mark that's around the audience that's picking everyone's pockets while we're all staring at the cards shuffling around. So it's not a conspiracy. It's not anything that well organized. It's you and I have talked about this. It's largely dysfunctional and disorganized, but it's human nature. So I think that, you know, it requires hypervigilance, and it requires having more of a stomach for nuance than many people seem to have at the moment, which is, I think, the thing that's most alarming.
I'm afraid it's one of those things that we're going to have to wait and see about. It's vastly complex.
Yep.
I think we can look at it even with the difficulties of looking in hindsight. We can say this is a more vastly complex time than we've encountered in American history on the whole, and that's one of the problems right there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Thanks again, Alex, for joining us. We appreciate you having you on, and good luck with your secret projects and so forth.
Thanks, Barrett. Anytime.
And thank you for listening and for joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shechtman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.